Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL senior correspondent Robert Colson. Welcome, Rob.
Thanks a lot, Steve. It's great to be here, and congratulations on the new project.
Oh, thanks. Well, human rights is a big theme this week, I think. Today marks 70 years since the UN adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And it seems like there's kind of a confluence of events related to human rights activists or victims of abuses this week, particularly when it comes to Russia. For one thing, on Wednesday, the Ukrainian director Oleg Sentsov will be awarded the Sakharov Prize for Freedom of Thought. That's in Strasbourg, but he won't be able to attend the ceremony because he's in prison in northern Russia serving a 20-year term. Sentsov, who's from Crimea, was convicted on a terror-related charge, but he and his supporters say he's being punished for opposing Russia's takeover of Crimea from Ukraine. Sentsov was on a hunger strike for 145 days earlier this year, demanding the release of dozens of Ukrainians held in Russia on what he and others say are politically motivated charges. That effort was unsuccessful. I'm not sure if any of the people he was referring to were freed. Now Russia is holding 24 more Ukrainians, the crewmen from three naval vessels seized by Russian forces near Crimea late last month. Western countries have called for their immediate release. Rob, do you think there's a chance those Ukrainian crewmen will be freed anytime soon, or Sentsov, for that matter?
Russia, of course, is not a rule of law state. It's important to keep that in mind. So anything can happen. The Kremlin can reach into any process at any time, and they could be released. But I would think that it's a long shot. The Kremlin likes to pretend, or to create the impression, at least, that Russia is a rule of law state. So they like to let these processes, as a rule, play out in some sort of way. So for as far as the Ukrainian crewmen go, I would anticipate that there would be a trial and quite a long period of that before his sentencing, well into next year. Sentsov is a different case a little bit because he's already much further along in the process. He's been held for quite a while now, and theoretically they could come to some sort of understanding to release him like they did with Nadya Savchenko. But he has tied his fate to the fate of other Ukrainian prisoners who he believes are held on politically motivated charges. And that would complicate the process of releasing him, I think, from Russia's point of view.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Rob. I mean, is he sort of if you think of them as hostages, he's kind of the main one. He's calling for the release of others, and so it does seem like that would be, you know, if the Kremlin were to do it, I think they would try to make it clear that we're not setting a precedent. We're doing it for some humanitarian reasons. Something like that, but I think that is definitely a factor that may not bode too well for him. And as for the crewmen, I agree. You know, I think Putin has said, you know, I think he said it was too early, and some interpreted that as, well, maybe we'll do it later. But he was just saying they need to go through the process, they need to have a trial, and that sort of thing. So it's Putin kind of stating or pretending that there are independent courts and that this is just a court case, really. Another thing related to human rights, several things this week. Tomorrow would be Alexander Solzhenitsyn's 100th birthday. He died in Moscow in 2008 at age 89, about 16 years after returning to Russia from exile in the United States. The spotlight, though, tomorrow will be on Lyudmila Alexeyeva, who died on Saturday evening. She was 91 and had been battling for human rights in the Soviet Union and then post-Soviet Russia under Yeltsin and under Putin for about five decades before her death, pretty much up to the day she died. Russians will be paying their last respects in a ceremony at the Central House of Journalists in Moscow. An interesting aspect here is that Lev Ponomarev, who's 77 years old and is also a prominent activist, was ordered jailed for 25 days recently, in part for a Facebook post about a protest. A court shortened that sentence to 16 days on Friday following pressure from abroad, but there's still calls for his release and people saying, you know, that this is, it's too much. Now, Ponomaryov has asked a court to let him out temporarily so that he can attend Alexeyeva's funeral. Rob, I hate to ask you to make another prediction, but I mean, she obviously is very well respected. Putin visited her on her birthday, her 90th birthday last year, I believe. And so this is the kind of thing that has resonance. But I don't want to ask you to make a prediction, but I will ask whether you think this kind of decision, the court decision, whether to release Ponomaryov just temporarily to pay his respects or not, is that made by the court or by the Kremlin or somewhere else? What do you think?
Before I answer that, I'd just like to say a word about Alexeyeva. I mean, she is a really heroic figure, not only for Russia, but for the whole West and the whole human rights movement in general, globally. She's one of the last, if not the last, members of the sort of the Havel, the Yelena Bonner, the generation of people who brought human rights to the world, to the discussion table in world politics. And I think it's a tragedy that she's passed. Ponomaryov, the case there is interesting. For any decision, of course, to release him would have to be made by the Kremlin. There's no way a court would make that sort of decision on its own initiative. So my guess would be that the court process would go normally and they would not even consider releasing him for this case. He has no legal relationship with Alexeyeva, so that they would even be inclined to recognize. And I can't think of any names right now, but I'm sure that I remember cases in the past where prisoners were not allowed to go out even when their close relatives were having funerals. So I would say more than surprised but shocked if they allowed him to go.
Okay, that's interesting. And thanks a lot for that perspective on Alexeyeva. As you say, I mean, it's great to have that. And I guess the question maybe was a little bit, detailed. And as you say, she's an amazing figure.
It is, and if you pardon me for interrupting, it is interesting to compare the two cases because, it shows that despite the decades of work that people like Alexeyeva have been doing, human rights work in Russia is very much the same as it was when she started. It's a lonely occupation. It's a dangerous occupation. And it's a occupation that relies on the character and the force of individual personalities. And Ponomaryov is one of the people who will be taking up that legacy.
Absolutely. And again, as you say, it's kind of, I mean, just been looking at all the photos of Alexeyeva, and you know she's standing there defiantly in many cases, with rows of police behind her, that sort of thing, and really it is amazing to think how long she was doing this, and you know the question of what was achieved. I think in some ways a lot was achieved, but in other ways obviously, the ultimate goal presumably was not. Thanks again for that. Switching topics here now, more than 3 months after the initial election in Primorye, voters in that region may finally choose a governor this coming Sunday. This is the region in the Far East, a huge region with Vladivostok, where the Communist Party's candidate was leading in the runoff in September until the very end of the count when the United Russia candidate surged ahead. The communists cried foul, and the vote was eventually ruled invalid, with the Central Election Committee suggesting both sides cheated. And neither of these two candidates is taking part in the new vote on Sunday. Putin has brought in a veteran kind of politician or fixer who had been governor of Sakhalin, Oleg Kozhemyaka. He's running against three relatively unknown figures. It would have been four, but one apparently pulled out today. Rob, what do you think the saga of the elections in Primorye says about Russian politics today and going forward?
Primorye is always one of the most interesting regions in Russia. It's known for its corruption and everything. But this election has been very interesting, and it's one of the interesting things about it to me is the role of the Communist Party. Although they're ostensibly an opposition party, of course, they're part of the systemic opposition. they played a leading role in the whole pension reform protest movement, but the overall effect of their role was actually to blunt those reforms. They distracted a lot of attention with calls for a referendum, which went nowhere, of course, and things like that. So they acted almost right on script in their role of a pseudo opposition, and in this case, they almost went too far. They refused to back their candidate Andrei Ishenko, who practically for certain won the original election. They decided, as a protest move, a very clever move, as a protest move, they would not submit a candidate for the election, and so Ishenko was forced to go as an independent, and that opened up the methods for other Kremlin tactics for limiting access to elections. He had to gather the signatures, and they were able to use the election committee to reject his signatures. So all the mechanisms for managing elections are working fine. They're in good shape, and this election shows that really well. Another reason why Primorye is important and why Putin might have decided, or the Kremlin might have decided, to pay particular attention to not having an opposition politician there is two things, I think. Primorye is of course the farthest eastern region in Russia, and so when there's a national election or a national wave of protests, the news from that region comes out first, and they can theoretically, I think, it hasn't really happened in practice, but theoretically they could be a bellwether for what would happen on that day.
Right.
News coming out of the Far East. Second, there's been a lot of talk lately about a deal on the Kuril Islands with Japan, and that would have to be managed locally as well. That also seems like a big long shot to me, and that problem has been on the agenda for decades now, and it's hard to imagine it being solved. But if the Kremlin is serious about it, they would definitely want to make sure that they had reliable management there.
Yeah, that's a very good. Those are both very good points. I mean, I think we can talk about the Kurils maybe next week. As you say, and that the Kremlin wants to be able to manage the region and manage processes there. And I think this guy Kozhemiakov, who was governor of Sakhalin, is probably that's probably his role that the Kremlin wants him to play. So it's a very good point about the media and about how things that happen in Primorye can set the tone. And one thing I would say, I mean, I agree with you that on the one hand, this election, or what will presumably be the final result, kind of shows that the Kremlin system for getting what it wants in the end is probably in place. But on the other hand, the vote also, and a few other votes during the elections in September, did show quite a bit of opposition or anger, disgruntlement, among Russians in various regions, and in others. You mentioned how important Primorye is to the Kremlin, but in some others, they didn't get a United Russia or pro Kremlin figure in there in the end. I think it's a bit of a change from the past in some ways,
They did allow a few systemic opposition governors to take office, but there was an interesting report just earlier this week about how the Kremlin has basically ignored them, and Putin didn't send any greetings of congratulations to them. They haven't had any meetings in the Kremlin, so they're sidetracked. But those, I think it would have been quite surprising if in a region like Primorye, which not only is important for the reasons I suggested, but it also is a very lucrative region, and the fishing industry there has been a corrupt mess for decades now. And so if the Kremlin had decided to let that region slip out of very strict control, it would have been a very surprising development, I think.
Absolutely, Rob. Well, thanks very much, Rob. Great to have you on the show. And that's it for today. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thank you.